Hi there, listeners. It's Farnoosh, and I just want to say I'm really honored that you've chosen to subscribe to So Money. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there. The fact that you're here is not lost on me. Now, if you're enjoying these episodes and you're benefiting from the advice and you want more, I've actually created something really special for us. It's called the So Money Members Club. It's an online platform where you can connect more closely with me and engage with fellow So Money fans who want to become more empowered in their financial lives. The website is SoMoneyMembers.com. And when you go there, you'll learn all the benefits, including exclusive monthly finance workshops, private group calls with me. You get your questions answered in our member community. I'm often in there weighing in, and you get instant access to all of our workshop recordings. We have a robust library that's growing. So far, we've had workshops on investing in real estate, kids and money, and how to earn more in 2024. And most of all, it's fun, positive, encouraging, all the things personal finance should be. Go to SoMoneyMembers.com, and I hope you'll join us. I'm limiting enrollment, and doors will close soon. Check out SoMoneyMembers.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1565, Brooke Taylor, transformational career coach Brooke Taylor on being a wounded achiever.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
The success wound is this kind of unconscious belief that I'm not enough and I need to get something external in order to feel enough. That wreaks havoc on our personal finances.
Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm Farnoosh Torabi. Question for you. Do you think that you might be a wounded achiever? I write in A Healthy State of Panic how in college I was an unapologetic careerist with no chill. And I worked really, really hard in my 20s and I overdid it for sure. And look, today I'm still unapologetic about my career ambitions, but I have learned, and it's been a process, to loosen up and value things like relaxation and sleep and just chilling as just as important as the doing in my career. And our guest today, Brooke Taylor, she's here to talk about her own personal story entailing what she calls her success wounds and how many quote unquote wounded and the many different types of the wounded achiever and how each of those manifest in your life and impact your career and money choices. Brooke is a global speaker, a transformational career coach, supporting female leaders at companies like Goldman Sachs, Coinbase, Google, McKinsey, all over the world. She's also a former marketing lead at Google. Interesting. We talk about her time at Google and how that was the place where she kind of had her breakdown. Brooke shares a very personal personal story of how her addiction to alcohol, success, and external validation nearly ruined her promising career at Google, and her story of personal transformation from that New York City dwelling, work hard, play hard 20-something, which I can relate to, into now a fulfilled, sober, and thriving entrepreneur. A very inspirational story and lots of advice for all of us in the audience. Here's Brooke Taylor. Brooke Taylor, welcome to So Money. It's a pleasure to have you on the show. We're going to talk about, oh gosh, you are such an expert. Specifically, we're going to talk about the success wound and how it shows up in our financial pursuits. And you have a lot of thoughts on the girl boss paradigm. And of course, that's old news now, but what's the new news? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Grateful for you to come on the show. You are a former marketing lead at Google. You've worked with incredible companies like Goldman Sachs, Google, as I said, Salesforce, McKinsey, Coinbase. You're a speaker, career coach. How did you get into this independent work that you run now, working B2B and B2C?
So I started my career at Google and was brought a whole lot of different opportunities for leadership development and professional development, but they were all so focused on the level of behavior. Use this framework, take this approach, and that will get you to where you want to go. That will lead you to your promotion. That will help you be a better manager or a better leader. But what I saw, because in the background, I was going through my own personal development, breakdown, breakthrough, I realized the importance of having a emotional mindset and spiritual conversation in addition to, and in a lot of instances, instead of just a behavioral conversation around leadership and career development, because behavior is just the output of a system, right? We need to look at the level of emotion and mindset behavior, and in a lot of ways, energetic work as well, before we can talk about behavior. So that was the gap in the market that I saw from a logical perspective. But of course, in addition to that, I was going through my own journey and really felt the need to kind of weave the lessons that I was learning and bring them into a corporate space.
Okay, take us to the dark place. Take us to a bad time when you were at one of these companies. Maybe it was Google. Not surprised to hear that maybe the soulful work is not priority at these unicorn companies. But what was your kind of rock bottom moment?
I'll take us even further back, and potentially you can relate to this, but I grew up in Silicon Valley before it was Silicon Valley. I grew up when it was, before the self-driving cars and the free lunch. It was this place, this mecca where the nerdiest engineers could come and become rock stars, godlike figures that we herald and we hold up today. And I was literally raised by people and in a community that built the internet, where intellect was king and achievement was queen. And so I learned at a very young age that to belong to this community, to my elite private school, and to my friends and family, I had to achieve and be productive and succeed in order to be worthy of that love and belonging. And it wasn't so much explicit. Of course, I had so much love and approval, but it was everything implicit. It was everything that was heralded. It was everything that was put up on a pedestal. It was everything that was celebrated. It was, even just going to an elite private school at age literally 10, needing to apply and take tests and, look even at the girls who were 7 years older and going into college, how much that was really, heralded and supported. So I took that kind of gold star chasing mentality to a great school, to Google. But in the background, in order to relieve this pressure and this soul sickness that I had, I needed to find an outlet. And my outlet became alcohol and partying. So I had this work hard, play hard mindset. And I took that from college, working and into Google, working really hard Monday through Thursday, chasing accolades, chasing external approval, trying to belong now into a very bro tech sales culture, which I think we all can understand what the potential downsides and the dark sides of that are. And
I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, none. It doesn't show up in any other industries either, does it? So Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a typical kind of like Liz Gilbert, eat, pray, love bathroom floor moment. Mine was a lot slower, a lot more painful, circling the toilet, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But eventually these kind of two worlds that I had, you know, this one of leading teams at Google, doing exceptional work, being on a stage, and then mere few hours later, you know, being in complete demoralization and in scary, waking up in scary circumstances, that just became untenable. But mostly inside, it was just wreaking havoc on my self-esteem. And I didn't realize that my addiction was not just to alcohol, but it was very much to external validation, approval, and to success. And I could not live without it. And that is the success wound. That is the pain that comes from mistaking success, achievement, and validation for self-worth. And that is the thing that brought me to my knees.
Mm. Did you feel alone in this while at work? Do you think your experience is endemic of a much larger problem? Maybe not to the extremes of like alcohol abuse, but this success wound that you are now, you're really like waving that flag. You're like really all about that and getting us understanding how we might be suffering with this. How widespread is this?
It's a universal human trauma. It is something that exists within all of us because we exist within the context of a capitalist society and system. I've worked with women across Asia Pacific. I've worked with women in North America. I've worked with people in the UK and Europe. And everywhere I go, this message resonates. And women come to me and not just come to me, but are in the audiences of the corporations and the organizations that I'm speaking to with issues like people pleasing, comparison, toxic perfectionism, overworking, underworking, hiding, feeling lost. And what I realized is that the root cause and reason behind those behaviors is this success wound, is this deep fear of not being good enough. It is that belief that I'm not good enough. And so I am going to take something external to fill that void, or I'm going to change myself in order to get that belonging. And so at the time when I was going through this at, you know, in my 20s at Google, I felt so alone. I could not understand why I would be in a conference room in a meeting where everyone would be talking about tiny little pieces of ad technology. And all I wanted to do was flip the table over and be like, you think this is a problem? Like I have real problems. Like, what are we doing here? What is the meaning of all of this? I can go from zero to existential crisis in like 2 seconds. I don't know about you. But I felt very alone in that. And so my mission now is to help raise an understanding of that thing that specifically like millennial and Gen Z women are feeling, that feeling of emptiness, like it's not enough, no matter how far or I push, no matter how much I get, it's still not enough. That is the success wound. And I think there's a lot of power in naming things and putting boundaries around things, like containing a psychological concept in a word, because it removes the power from it if we can name it.
Yes. Oh, I know about that. And you have actually five levels or five types, archetypes of the wounded achiever. I want to break those down shortly, but going back to your manifestation of all this in your 20s, what was the first step you took towards healing?
My first step had to be getting sober, and I had to remove the thing that was causing me the most pain first. And that is the approach that I take with all of my clients. What are the one to two habits, behaviors, addictions that we are using to fix an internal soul sickness and this internal void? So for me, it was alcohol. So I had to get sober. I got sober in a 12-step paradigm. I'm still sober. Been sober for 7.5 years, which I'm really proud of. And thank you. And that transformed every area of my life. For other people and for my clients, the first step in healing their success wound is this stabilization. What are those kind of even small, it doesn't have to look like alcohol abuse, to your point. It can look like toxic comparison. It can look like completely being out of whack with one's boundaries. It can look like people pleasing to a point of, you know, sickness. So those are the things that I work on stabilizing, kind of like any wound. If you were hemorrhaging blood and you came into the emergency room, we need to stabilize you first before we can even diagnose what's going on. So that's what we do first.
And then when you get to the diagnoses, can I say these are the archetypes? Which one are you, or were you? And or maybe we could talk about the ones that are the one or two that are more patterned in our culture.
Yeah. So there are five kind of manifestations of this success wound that permeate our culture. And these, I call them kind of wounded achiever archetypes. And anyone can listen to this, or they can take a quiz and figure out what archetype they are. When I was in this period of my life, I was, no surprise, the work hard, play hard, wounded achiever. This is the person who has to be busy, has to chase all the peak experiences, has to live life to the fullest, is running on fear of regret that they might wake up one day and say, I didn't do it all. And this, you know, work hard, play hard. This is the person who is kind of constantly keeping themselves busy such that they don't have to look at the real thing that's going on underneath. Right. So, you know, on the inside, there's this nagging feeling that working hard and playing harder is a good thing. It's something to be admired. But the truth of how it impacts people is that it's decimating their self-esteem and their unworthiness. So that's the first one.
Wow. Okay, keep going. Oh, by the way, I talk about fear of regret in my book, one of our biggest fears. I won't say more than that. I'll just let you keep going.
Okay, I'm curious.
I feel like I don't think I'm that one. I think I don't think, because you know what? I'm not really good at playing. I'm not a good player. I'm not a good have fun person. At least I wasn't in the early, I felt like I maybe over-index on work and didn't, is there an archetype for someone who just works?
That's it. You got the next one. I think this might be you. This is the grinder. This is the grinder.
Okay, I'm the grinder. Okay.
So tell me if this sounds familiar. Do you believe that, or did you believe that the longer and the harder that you worked, the more success that you would have?
Yes, I very much relate to that linear myth. Actually, I don't think it's true, but nevertheless, it's how I ended up, I think, getting very burnt out in my 20s.
Yeah. It's no surprise. And you know, a lot of people continue that not only through their 20s, but their 30s, their 40s, their 50s, especially when they become parents. They grind at the parenting game. They grind at thinking that they can not just have it all, but that they need to keep it all supported, that they need to, can keep it all up. If it's not going to get done, if it's not going to get done by them, then it's not going to get done. So this is kind of running on a fear of not being supported and also a fear of not being good enough. So they're often, these grinders are often high achieving children who ascended in an educational system quickly and learned that the longer they worked and the better they performed at school or in sports or in musical theater, that the better that they would be, because they received very easily praise and acknowledgement and attention and love. But of course, it has its downside. It can lead to dramatic burnout. It can lead to a sense of, if I'm not productive, then I'm going to be losing my edge. That nagging voice or that fear of, you know, taking your foot off the pedal. And this, you know, not only leads to burnout, but it can lead to an over-identification of, I am my work and I am my productivity. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not being productive, I'm not living. Does that encapsulate where you feel like you are now or where you were?
It was very much my narrative. And while I don't think I buy into it now, it's a very easy sort of relapse, if you will, you know, like you can easily get back into that. Because to your point, it's like low hanging fruit for those of us who like are not afraid of work and like to achieve and like to be admired. I mean, it's like low hanging fruit. Let me just keep doing this thing that's going to get me all the accolades and feed my soul, if you will, or my happiness. But to your point, there's a diminishing return to that.
That's right. Diminishing return. And I use that term a lot. Success and work is the warmest place to hide. It's a very easy addiction to have in our society. It's a very easy behavioral pattern. And I want to be very clear. I'm not pathologizing female ambition. I think people should go after with their whole heart everything that they want. And I think that we would never kind of call a man a grinder or a perfectionist. But when is the point of diminishing returns and when does it cause suffering? That's the type of grinding that I'm talking about. If you're working like a dog, and I've never seen a dog work from a place of, you know, fear or concern, they're working with joy and excitement and abundance. Great. But when does it cause suffering and when is it diminishing returns? That's when we want to take a look at this behavior.
Yeah, it kind of brings up this other tangential topic of when we sometimes say to women, you should really slow down, because almost as if like her ambition is a threat. It comes across as like too much, you know, like maybe you should just like relax a little bit, or you need to put more balance into your life but maybe she's absolutely so happy, you know, doing what she's doing. She doesn't feel that way. It's sort of an external criticism. And that's not what we're saying, but that's important to like bring up, because that's the thing that I think as a person, that is where you have to be really mindful. Is the way that I'm feeling because I'm actually physically tired, burned out, or it's because I'm feeling pressure from externalities to slow it down? I don't know. Have you ever had any experience with that in your own personal comeuppance?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code PODCAST15. The weather's getting warmer as I record. It's a nice 73 degrees on the East Coast. So, finally, time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and, fingers crossed, hello to shorts and tees. And I need to update my wardrobe for the long haul. And, you know, I don't want to spend a fortune. So luckily, I found Quince. I'm honest. I've got a lineup of timeless pieces from Quince that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year. I'm talking premium European linen dresses, blouses and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and tons more. Best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. I have t-shirts from Quince, pajamas from Quince. My very chic and fashionable sister-in-law, Hannah, her whole closet is Quince. And people often stop us and ask, where did you get this? Don't tell me the price. And then when I do, they're shopping on Quince.com. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to Quince.com/somoney for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's Quince.com/somoney to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/somoney.
Absolutely. And, you know, I can share about that from my own experience, but the example that I have is actually a manager that I had when I worked in a DEI consulting role. When I was living in Australia. Her name's Sarah Liu. She runs a consultancy called The Dream Collective. And she loves to work. She loves it. It's her happy place. It is something that gives her a lot of joy, a sense of purpose. I won't, you know, diagnose any of that. But here's the difference. She says, and from what I observe, she's working from a place of wholeness, from desire, from collaboration, from creativity. She's working from her true self. She's not working from her success wound. Hustling and grinding and pushing, that is when we're working from our success wound. So the question that I think anybody can ask themselves is this behavior coming from wounding? Or is it coming from wholeness? And just going back to the top of my point, which was, you know, at Google and at a lot of these corporations where we're being taught around leadership traits and behavior, we're just given frameworks around how to give feedback, how to manage up, how to grow in our career. But when that is coming from wounding, that is going to be perpetuating a lot of the issues that we're seeing in our corporations today. But when that's coming from a place of wholeness and desire and collaboration and self, and that is when things can really transform for us individually and collectively.
Brooke, how did you learn about all of this? Seriously, like, where do you source a lot of this? I mean, I've had a lot of therapists and clinical psychologists on the show, and we talk so much about our upbringing and how it impacts our adulthood. But for you, as you've been researching this and, you know, creating your POVs and your strategies, like, what are some resources that you've been benefiting from?
Going all the way back, I would say, you know, my sense of spirituality and this concept of self started when I was 20. And, you know, I started researching and reading Marianne Williamson, Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, because this concept of wholeness and true self, that can be a philosophical conversation, a psychological conversation, a spiritual conversation. What is a self, right? That is naturally, it lends itself into all these other disciplines. So I came at this from a spiritual context. That there's a part of me and there's a part of all of us that is eternal, that is inherently good, that is whole, that is complete. And then when I got sober, I entered into a 12-step paradigm, which is, again, a spiritual form of transformation. You have to believe in a higher power, whatever that is to you. It doesn't have to be divine. It doesn't have to be religious at all. It can be this concept of love or reality or, you know, the ocean. It can be whatever it is. But the fact is that there is something other than you that is benevolent and that is taking care of you. And I believe that this concept of self and coming from wholeness is partially a spiritual conversation. Other things that I found really helpful, psychotherapy and learning internal family systems. Family systems is a concept that we have kind of three selves or three parts within us. We have a true self, the part of us that I just mentioned is eternal, that is good, that is naturally calm and confident and conscious and courageous and connected, but it gets obscured by wounds and protectors. You were nodding. Are you familiar with IFS?
Dick Schwartz. Yes. I have his book on my coffee table.
That's awesome. I'm a big fan of IFS. And then of course, other work, you know, it's funny, my therapist wrote a book and it just came out. So I obviously like tore through her book. It's called The Perfectionist's Guide to Losing Control by Catherine Morgan Schaeffler. She was my therapist. So I was obviously like, where am I in the pages? Like, what does she really think about
me? Oh my goodness.
Did she
include you?
No, she did. I mean, she said it's like an amalgamation of amalgamations, but of course, secretly, you know, I'm self-centered. I'm like, where am I? So, but she talks a lot about this notion of like wholeness and perfectionism and what does perfect actually mean? And again, not to pathologize female perfection, but to see it as a strength to be honed rather than a weakness to be pathologized. And that was a lot of the work that we did together because she was an in-house coach, she was an in-house therapist at Google. And so she was kind of an expert in that overachiever. And then I've been working with women, you know, in this context for 6 years. And so it's been a lot of kind of trial and error with them. And then, of course, in my own experience.
What I appreciate a lot about IFS is just this idea that all your feelings are valid. And with a book coming out on fear that I've written, you know, it was very validating to read that and go, okay, so it's not just my hunch that I think fear can be, to use your words, something to be honed in on, as opposed to discarded or undermined, that fear can be an actual strength. Imagine that. And so this podcast is obviously about money. We've been talking a lot about success wounds and how they manifest at work. But how do you see it also playing out in our financial lives? When you have worked with clients or met people that have experienced any archetype of this success wound, that you see certain things showing up as well, these patterns in their financial behaviors, what are those things?
So if the success wound is this kind of unconscious belief that I'm not enough and I need to get something external in order to feel enough, that wreaks havoc on our personal finances. Let me give you an example from my own life. When I was kind of deep in my success wound, I was buying things to fill the void. I was very much more susceptible to like ads and marketing that told me if I bought this cream that it would make my skin glow, or if I went on this diet that I would look better in my clothes, or if I, you know, got my Rent the Runway subscription, I would never wear the same outfit twice because that's a terrible thing to do. I was latching on to style trends and fads in order to fit in and feel good enough. I, of course, was using alcohol and partying and trips to escape. Oh my God, the trips, the travel with the under the guise of like, I just need to relax. But it was really to kind of fill some sort of void. Maybe I'll experience something on this trip. Maybe I'll fall in love on this trip. Maybe this is the trip where I really can like detox and feel good and come back feeling radiant. And then another one of the archetypes is the hider, the person who, you know, says, okay, I'm not good enough. And maybe success is for a lucky few, but not for me. And I'm just going to stay, I'm going to succeed, but only so much. And I'm not going to take risks. And I'm not going to go outside my comfort zone. I had elements of that hider for sure. And a hider in their personal finances tends to ignore their investing strategy, ignore what's really going on, avoid and not look at what's really going on. So, you know, for me, not checking my credit card bill, not being aware of what was happening. And so actually, when I went down this path of success wound recovery and getting sober, my savings account doubled in 6 months, which was pretty remarkable.
Wow. Well, you brought up, you know, these things that when we become more susceptible to marketing and then we think we have to like go on the trip and buy the yoga pants and take on the diet fads, that all speaks to this theme of wellness culture and self-help and self-care. What are the connections you see between the overspending in the self-care department and our success wounds?
That is such a good question. I love this topic. What I've found is that when that wellness culture can be a band-aid and can masquerade as diet culture, as capitalism, as patriarchy, even though it tends to be run by, you know, women or female identifying people, it still is patriarchy because it profits off of our belief that we're not good and whole and healthy just as we are. And here's the truth. When I stopped looking for things outside of myself to fix this soul sickness, this spiritual malady, this success wound, I had to detox from social media. I had to unfollow influencers. I had to be careful about where I was putting my credit card. I had to be careful where I was putting my attention. And so the more I consume things outside of myself, including wellness culture, the less I'm actually tuned into my own internal compass and the more susceptible I am to these kind of lies and ploys. Wellness culture is marketing culture and it's capitalism. I wonder if you, I don't know what your thoughts are around wellness culture and even patriarchy. I think the capitalism part's obvious, but what do you think about the patriarchy part?
Oh boy. Yeah, of course. I mean, I think capitalism to some extent it started as patriarchy, right? The root of it is, I mean, like first was patriarchy, then came capitalism. Like, I think we decided on the politics before the economics, or maybe they happened together. I don't know. But they were all decided in the same room with the same people and the same looking people. Mm-hmm. To talk about capitalism, you're talking about patriarchy. Now, I love to make money. So is that patriarchal? No. I haven't really gotten that deep into thinking about it in those ways. But of course, as you speak and as you have connected those dots for us, I'm nodding. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. I mean, as I sit here, I'm wearing yoga pants and an aloe tank top that I probably spent more money than I should have. But I also will say, though, that within the wellness culture, I have found what I do enjoy doing, that I don't feel pressure, that I have found things to do that first and foremost speak to my desire to be healthy. There's nothing wrong with that, right? So what we're not saying that like all the things that you might be investing in towards your health and wellness is just subliminal patriarchy. That's not it. But yeah, I think a lot of the marketing, and a lot of the marketing in particular that wants us to stay small, figuratively, physically, is highly questionable.
Yes. And this is the nuance. The behavior of going and buying an aloe shirt or getting Botox or, you know, getting a yoga subscription, none of it is bad. None of it. But the question is, where is it coming from?
Right.
Is it coming from wounding, or is it coming from wholeness? Is it coming from, I need to fix myself, or is it coming from self-love and self-care? So that is really, that's the question to be asking.
Well, I'd be lying if I said it's not to fix myself, because of course we all have the things about ourselves that we want to improve upon. I think I'm resisting aging a little bit, you know, I'm like, oh my God. And social media doesn't help. Those like aging filters, like what are we doing to ourselves? That's the thing that I just saw yesterday, that I had my son who's 9 use it, and he looked like he was 11. Like it doesn't work on kids. Oh my God. He's like, Mommy, you look different. I was like, yeah, I look like Mimi. That's what's going on here. No, I think humor helps. I think being able to laugh at yourself when you catch yourself in these moments, you're like, I'm just trying to do this to be able to like feel like I'm 30 again. But I think that I'm really appreciating the strong women out there who are, this is their platform where they're like, I'm tired of trying to feel like I was 10 years ago or look like I was 15 years ago. Like, what happened to like feeling like you're 50, feeling like you're 60? Can we do that in peace and celebration? Mm-hmm. So I'm all for that. That's who I'm following on social media, because I know me, and I know that I need those reinforcements. I need those reminders.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Reinforcements for sure.
That's the honest truth, Brooke.
I love it. Thank you for your honesty. That makes a lot of sense.
I'm a work in progress.
We all are.
Now I know that you're working on a book. Is this a prelude to the book? Like everything we've talked today, is that TBD?
Yes, I'm going on the very exciting, you know, journey, so to speak, of writing a book. I wrote my proposal, and I am working with an agent who we share in common. And I'm just so excited to bring this message to the masses. I'm so excited to have this nuanced conversation on how aligned female ambition can change the world, and helping people to really kind of identify what that kind of little nagging source of emptiness is, such that we can find a solution. You know, my kind of vision or mission is that in the same way we all can now understand what our anxiety is or what our trauma is, I'd love for everyone to be able to really understand what their success wound is, not such that we can, you know, feel bad about ourselves, but such that we have a solution. Because when I know I'm anxious, I know that feeling is anxiety. Mm-hmm. Now, for the first time in college, I had no idea what that feeling was, but now I'm like, oh, that's anxiety. Now I know what tools I need in order to move through it. But if I had no idea what it was, I wouldn't have been able to treat it. So same thing with success wound recovery. I want people to understand what this is, what its sources are in our lives and in our childhood, such that we can grow and shift and move into a space of aligned ambition and conscious success. And conscious success is the state of happiness and fulfillment and genuine contentment that comes from following the directions of our internal guidance system over culture. And it's as simple as that. But there are so many layers to this conversation. And I'm so glad to have had this nuanced conversation around female ambition and, you know, perfectionism and what are we working from, wholeness or wounding, and what are the pros and cons of all of that.
I love that. Thank you so much for bringing the message to us. And we'd love to have you back once this is packaged all in a book, or even before that, because I know like that's like saying see you here in 2 years, because you know, books are we're not going to wait that long. Yeah. We'd love to have you back, Brooke. Thank you so much. Tell us where we can find your work.
Wonderful. So I'm on Instagram, Brooke V. Taylor. My website is brooketaylorcoaching.com. And you can dive into the five archetypes at my website. It's brooketaylorcoaching.com/quiz. And you can find out what your archetype is and get specific recommendations to heal your success wound and move from wounded achiever to aligned achiever.
Grinders. If you're a grinder.
Grinder, baby.
Let's unite. Brooke Taylor. Brooke, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to Brooke for joining us. You can learn more about Brooke at brooketaylorcoaching.com. I'm also following her on Instagram. She's got great content there at Brooke V. Taylor. We'll put all those links in our show notes. 20 days until A Healthy State of Panic is out in the world. If you want to get yours first before everybody else, best to pre-order it now so that you can get it right on October 3rd. You can do so by visiting ahealthystateofpanic.com. I have some bonuses reserved for those of you who do wish to get a head start on this order. I would really appreciate it because we know pre-orders, they go a very long way in helping an author's bestseller ambitions, helping us get our books in bookstores and setting up books for long-term success. I appreciate you. Thanks in advance. Until Friday, everybody, I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. For the longest time, I dreaded buying bras. It was like shopping for jeans. Impossible. You want a bra that's sexy? You want a bra that's comfortable? You can't have both. Well, now you can, thanks to Third Love. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, the ick, the ugh, out of bra shopping. That's why they make solutions for every bra problem or brablem. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school. Get smoothing, you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made with premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.